Good afternoon. Welcome to We the People Radio. Oh, it's somebody talking to me, and I got to listen to the music in the back of my head, you know, and Bill started staring at me and made me feel kind of nervous and sweaty.
On.
What the heck?
Yeah.
I should just give him the look and then let him do it. Oh, my
gosh. I can do it.
Oh, sure.
Oh, sure.
Mm, go ahead.
Yeah. Who's our sponsor, Aaron?
You missed the beginning. Oh, my gosh. We've been working the fair. We've been working the fair, and boy, was it hot. But
yeah,
I have to say,
one.
The Shasta District Fair this year was wicked hot, but the Republican booth was in the air-conditioned building.
Yep.
I just did Joe Biden. Did you hear me?
You did.
It was in the air-conditioned building.
I did that.
It was so great. We did it for free, so, you know, sorry, Joe, they didn't pay us more.
we didn't get any more pay.
It was just a little surprise to find out we got to be in the air-conditioned building, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
You
could walk from 115 degrees outside to a cool 80 inside.
It was spectacular.
It was great.
And yeah, but you know, the real point of my bringing that up, besides the fact that if you live in Shasta County and we're having a fair again, you should come volunteer. But the best part was huge amounts of support. We sold Trump gear. So we had hats, shirts, you know, that kind of stuff. And I don't care if it was a six-year-old kid, boy or girl, or an 85-year-old man. There was one guy. He was really old. He kind of reminded me of, what's his name on Rocky, you know?
Oh, Burgess Meredith.
Yeah, Burgess Meredith.
Yeah.
And he comes up, and we had these magnets. I was like, oh, man, these might be a bridge too far. It said, like, Joe and the Ho gotta go. And I'm like, oh, we're going to take some abuse for that. And you know, this guy walks up, and I thought, oh, he's staring at him. I go, he's going to be pissed about that. He goes, hey, I'm going to need one of those magnets. I've got a hat that says that. I was like, you got to be kidding me. But people were fun. We had the big life-size cutouts of Donald and Melania, you know, whether they were 20-something or 17 or whatever, they all wanted to take pictures with them.
Yeah.
And
that's as big this year as it was last year.
Yeah, you really couldn't tell.
Yeah, I mean, people were still lining up, you know.
Those two girls, the high school girls, 17, they're so excited they get to vote in the midterm. They turn 18 in August, and they can't wait to register and vote in the midterm. And I thought, that's pretty great. So anyway, it gives you hope that the youth is not completely captured by the insanity of the left. So anyway.
Yeah.
Well, Bill, who's our sponsor this hour?
Well Aaron, our sponsor this hour is Pat Bay Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer.
I heard they're really nice.
They are. They're very nice. And if you're looking for a Honda generator, you better get down there.
I heard those are really nice.
They're really nice. In fact, they're almost sold out of them. So if you want one, get down there and get one right away, because if that power goes out, you're not going to find a generator.
Yeah.
They're going to be gone.
PG&E's drafting your power shutoff notice as we speak.
Yep. So they're a Honda dealer, and they've still got a few to choose from. But yeah, anything, tractors, attachments, mowers, any of that. Of course, we're about out of mowing season, but go by and see them. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, or give them a call at 226-9226, or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da! So let's see. You can find We the People Radio. You can find us online with all our info. You can send us an email or make a phone call. Tell us who you'd like to hear. We like doing the whole story instead of like little sound bites. So most of the time we will have somebody on for 2 hours. Or like today, we'll have Alex Newman on for the first hour. And we will have Dr. Shazong Chen on the second hour. So today will be kind of fun. We'll be doing two different things. You can find all the information for June 27th, 2021 at wethepeopleradio.us. We let Bill do the .us sometimes. It's not fun though when he's ready. It takes my joy away.
Yeah, it does.
So our first guest is Alex Newman. Alex is going to give you 2 hours of information in 1 hour, by the way. So I just thought I'd spoiler alert that. He's an award-winning international journalist, educator, author, and consultant. And he's not a consultant because he doesn't have a real job, which happens a lot of times. People say they're a consultant. Alex is really busy. Really busy and has been very, very successful. He is full of information, and he's written a wide array of publications in the United States and abroad. Currently serves as a contributor to the Epoch Times, when we love them. Also WorldNet Daily, Freedom Project Media, The New American Magazine. And he writes a lot in New American Magazine. He has some wonderful articles. The Law Enforcement Intelligence Brief, and a whole bunch of others that he might or might not tell us about. He has authored several books, serves as a director for multiple organizations in the fight for faith, family, and freedom. And he now has 5 kids. He was going to come on with us last week, but it's like, hey, it's Father's Day. You just had number 5, so I think they're going to be mad at you if you...
You're going to have 5 unhappy...
Bail out and hang out with us. So we postponed him a week. So how was Father's Day, Alex?
It was wonderful. Thank you guys so much for having me on the program.
Sure.
Absolutely. So we will just follow along. How's that? You pull.
Hey, well, I really appreciate you guys having me here. And, you know, Father's Day is fun. And I know, contrary to popular wisdom, fatherhood is fun. So.
Yeah, you know what? That's an excellent point. And you're a big, your focus, at least as far as I've always read your articles and heard from you, is always education. And that's a big thing with you, is education.
Yeah, it is, Aaron. And that's, I think the main reason I focus on that so much is because I came to realize years ago, as I started digging into this material, and, you know, full disclosure, I never set foot in an American government school. I grew up overseas. I never went to a public school in America. So I didn't realize what an atrocity was being perpetrated against our children and against our people until I started doing the research. I started looking at the government's own numbers. But the reason I focus so much on education is because it is the issue that transcends all of the other issues. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got all these people fighting all these different battles. And don't get me wrong, I support those fights, and I'm involved in those fights. We need to defend our Second Amendment. We need to have legitimate elections. We need to secure the border. We need to hold Communist China accountable and prevent them from taking over. We need to stop the killing of unborn babies. I mean, we got all these battles that we need to fight. But the one issue that runs right through every single one of them is education. The way we got in this mess was education, and the only way we're going to get ourselves out of this mess, and the only way we're going to win over the long term on all these other issues, is by dealing with education. Because right now, they've got about 75% of our children, depending on what part of the country you're in, locked in these indoctrination centers, these brainwash camps, for 5 days a week, for 8 hours a day, for 9 months out of the year, for more than 12 years. And I really do not believe that our nation and our constitutional republic will survive another generation of this. Yes, it's true. Sometimes kids slip through the cracks of the system and come out not brainwashed. Those are typically the ones like me who hate school and don't pay any attention and get kicked out. true story. But if we continue losing our children at this rate, it's all over. And all those other battles we're fighting on, we're just going to lose them all. So we might as well go home.
No, yeah. You're absolutely right.
And, you know... the kids that we saw at the fair, except for some of the older ones who didn't have their parents with them, but all the little kids, you could tell. I mean, it was a nice, you know, nice family. The folks were enthused, and like the one little girl came over and she wanted a little Trump shirt and a pin, and she was Miss California something or other. She was like 6 years old, and she had a tiara and a sash. She had just won something at the fair, so whatever she was showing maybe. And It just, you know, you looked around and you saw all these really, I mean, basically clean cut, you know, families. And
well,
then
there was a little girl who said, oh, every night at dinner time, my dad, he sits us, we all talk about everything that's going on and what's right and what's wrong. I thought, wow. Well,
she was the 17-year-old.
Yeah.
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 She said, oh, I get a lot of political education at home. And I thought, well, good for you. And a lot of debate. It wasn't just, you know, the parents drilling them, but, you know, a lot of sharing of ideas. And, you know, I didn't read in your bio out loud, but people should know. You lived in eight different countries on 4 continents, and I know you speak multiple languages. And so it's not like you've been in a bunker in Montana under the thumb of a militia and you're just totally indoctrinated. I mean, you've been out there.
And, you know, a lot of people ask me if I was homeschooled. I say no. Actually, I went to elite versions of the indoctrination centers. I went to the schools where they send the managerial elite of the world. They get an extra significant dosage of the brainwashing and the indoctrination and the propaganda. But it did give me one really incredible advantage that I'll be eternally grateful for, and that is the tools that I needed to be able to learn things myself. So, whereas in America, they use under Common Core all across this country, they use quackery to teach reading that we've known since the 1840s doesn't work. I mean, that's why, according to the federal government's own numbers, about half of our people are either functionally illiterate or so close to it that you can hardly tell the difference. And that was a deliberate thing. I learned how to read properly using phonics, a systematic intensive phonics, growing up at a French school in Mexico City. And because of that, you know, when I have a question, I can go and find the answer. It's funny, mm-hmm. they hide some of the secrets in the library. So I have the ability to read, which, you know, I think a lot of people underestimate the freedom and the just the incredible blessing that it is. And also I was taught to reason. I was taught to think. I was taught to research. I was taught to use logic and be able to evaluate evidence and things like that. So I did get a lot of the brainwashing. Very heavy globalist indoctrination, very heavy big government indoctrination. The UN was kind of always presented as the savior of humanity. But they did, to their credit, teach me to read and teach me to think, and that enabled me, I think, to go and find the answers to these questions about, for example, where did the public school system come from? Who are the people who are trying to destroy our republic and give us a new form of government and fundamentally transform our nation, mm-hmm. to quote a certain Barack Hussein Obama. So it's a real pickle that we're in. And on that same vein, it kills me to see all these ungrateful Americans. And I know what they show on the TV is not the mainstream, but there are a lot of people in this country, and it's hard to know exactly how many, but there are a lot of them who don't realize what they have. They have this naive idea because they were taught in government school, and then they were told in the media that America is this uniquely evil place, and we're horrible, and we're racist, and we're oppressive, and the police are evil. I mean, once you've been overseas and you've spent a significant amount of time, I grew up in the third world, mostly in Latin America, then I moved over to Europe, and then I moved to Africa. Once you've been overseas for any amount of time, and then you come back to this country, you realize, hey, you need to get down on your knees and kiss the ground that you're walking on.
Oh, that is so true.
It's not perfect, but it's incredible.
Yeah, I've said that all along. You know, you think it's bad over here? Go overseas. Go live over there. Just tour over there for 2 weeks.
Bill just had to spend some time in England. I remember years ago, and he was just so excited to see a McDonald's.
Oh,
he just wanted food.
Just,
that didn't involve mushrooms.
Just the lifestyle and I mean, just so many things are different. You come over here and you can, you know, go into a grocery store and pretty much buy anything you want. That's not the case in a lot of the world. You get what they give you and you're happy for it. And yet, you're right. We have a lot of people over here that are just, frankly, spoiled and don't know any different. And it's
yep.
really too bad.
At the UN, you go to a lot of the, do you go to all of them, or, I mean, you know, mostly all of them, the UN conferences?
I've gone to most of the climate conferences over the last 10 years or so, and then a lot of the other ones as well, whenever time permits. If it's something that looks like it's going to be significant and we have it in our budget, I go. And I've been doing that since I got out of university back in 2009 was the first one I went to in Copenhagen. So, yeah.
I picture it as a bunch of entitled elitists who have no intention of living under the rules that they're promoting for everyone else, and then a bunch of kind of screaming meme idealistic dupes that are running around promoting things because they think the other people are telling them the truth. Is that wrong?
That's actually a very good summary. You know, they divide everybody up. They've got different categories of attendees. And so you have the VVIPs. These are the really important people. They show up. First, they land at the airport in a private jet. And, you know, they come with all their servants and their slaves. And then they take from their private jet. They hop onto a helicopter. And then they land at the compound that's been selected for this UN summit. So those are the elites. And everybody else kind of just revolves around them. But they've got, you know, I call it the cheerleading section. I think they prefer the term journalists and media. But Really, we should not be so naive as to pretend like they're journalists or media. They really are the cheerleading section, and I could give you endless stories. I mean, some dictator will stand up and say, hey, we're going to save the world. We've got a new climate agreement, and you're all going to have to pay a lot of money to the UN. And all these doofuses in the media section, right? They call them in for press conferences and stuff. They get up on their feet, and they give these dictators and kleptocrats and bureaucrats these standing ovations. Am I seeing? Is this real?
Journalism is dead.
Yeah.
It is. It's pathetic. And then you have the handful of real journalists who actually try to go to these things. They often find themselves banned. I've become good friends now with, I think, one of Canada's premier journalists. Her name is Sheila Gunn Reid. She works for The Rebel, which is by far Canada's largest independent media outlet. They have, I think, 1.5 million subscribers on YouTube. I mean, they're huge. They're bigger than most mainstream media. And they used to go to all these UN summits, and they still do. But then the Canadian government got mad at them, and they told the UN, hey, you have to ban them. So they literally have to stay outside of the conference reporting from the outside because they ask real questions, because they don't just mindlessly parrot the UN press releases that are pumped out by the dozen
every
day.
They sound like troublemakers.
All right, we've got to take a really quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Alex Newman. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
We're back. Our guest is Alex Newman, and I wanted to point out before we get going too far that Alex will be speaking September 17th in Sacramento at William Jessup University, just outside of Sacramento, for the Eagle Forum of California. So,
good.
If you need more information on that, I might have it texted to me before the end of the hour, or you can go online and give us a holler. All our information's on there. Okay, Alex. I want to talk Common Core, critical race theory. Where would you like to go with the exposure of the things that people can look forward to either now or in the future?
Well, it really is a never-ending subject, but I think critical race theory is on everybody's mind, so it's as good a place as any to start. It's not new. In fact, they've been dividing our children for many, many years. Critical race theory just so happens to have exploded into the public consciousness lately. And so we covered it extensively in a new special report we just put out called Save Our Children in the New American Magazine. But I think there's a few important things for people to know. First of all, for communists, and they've said this clear back since the 1960s when Students for a Democratic Society was using this slogan, the issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution, and that is just as true with the global warming fraud as it is with the critical race theory. They're not actually interested in improving race relations or racial justice or anything of the sort. It's an issue that advances the revolution, and that's why they care about it. Same thing with man-made global warming, or I should say alleged man-made global warming. They're not trying to save the climate, you goobers. They're trying to enslave you. Global warming provides a very good pretext because, hey, if the gas you exhale is toxic pollution, well then, yeah, everything that you do needs to come under their control. So critical race theory, it comes from critical theory, and it comes directly from Marx's ideas. He recognized that you have to divide society into oppressors and oppressed, and the way Marx viewed it, he viewed history through that lens, that history was just a never-ending cycle of oppressed, being oppressed and oppressors trying to maintain their oppression, and he viewed it in terms of the bourgeoisie and the proletariat. bourgeoisie being the middle class, the wealthy, the business owners, the people who own property, the proletariat being the working class. And in the Soviet Union, with a lot of money from the Wall Street megabanks, as was documented in the book Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, that worked. It was effective. They had some very cunning revolutionaries. There was already turmoil. The government there wasn't particularly nice, the czarist government in Russia. And so that worked there. But then when they tried that in the Western world, in Western Europe, and especially in the United States, like, hey, your employer is oppressing you. Like, what do you mean? My employer gives me 3 weeks of vacation, and I have paid health insurance, and I make more money than anybody in my family ever made, and I got a promotion last week, and pretty soon I'm going to be owning stock. And, you know, it was a silly idea. So they had to come up with something else. So clear back in the 1920s, they came up with the idea that in America, race would be the fault line to exploit. And they set about doing that. That's where critical race theory, the idea of it, came from. Instead of having the rich and the poor, the proletariat versus the bourgeoisie, they said in America, it's going to be black versus white. Now they've added in a whole bunch of other things. If you're cisgender, which means you're a man who understands you're a man or a woman who understands you're a woman, then that makes you part of the oppressor class. If you are a Christian, if you speak English, if you are heterosexual, right, if you're just a normal person, that puts you in the oppressor class. So critical race theory stems from that idea. Jesus teaches in the New Testament, kingdom divided against itself cannot stand. And Marxists understand that. If they want to take down a society, they'd have to begin by dividing it, fanning those divisions and inflaming that tension to the point where there's chaos and conflict, and then they rise up to the top. So that's what it stems from. And I think one of the most important things to know about this, other than the fact that this poison is being pumped into the minds of your children, is that we have seen this movie before. I did an article recently in the Epoch Times on this, and I did several pieces on this in the New American. And I interviewed a lady who I serve on a board with. Her name is Lily Tang Williams. She immigrated here from China. She grew up during the Cultural Revolution. And she said something fascinating to me. She said, this is exactly what Chairman Mao did during the Cultural Revolution. Yeah. He herded all the children into these indoctrination centers called public schools, with air quotes, and then taught them that there were two classes. There was the black class and the red class. And if you were born in the black class, you were horrible, you were evil, you needed to come up to the front of the classroom and do self-criticism, you needed to repent for your privilege. The black classes were the landowners, the business owners, the Christians, the anti-communists, etc. The red classes were the landless, the workers, the red guards, the communist soldiers, etc. And she said, you know, it didn't happen right away, but within a few years there was blood running in the streets. Children from the black classes were handing over their parents to the communist authorities to be tortured and even murdered. And she said, look, if this continues in America, that's where that's going to head. And that stuck with me, because when you project out the lines, you see where this is going, it ends in absolute disaster. And the people at the highest levels who are promoting this, not your second grade schoolroom teacher who doesn't know better, but at the highest levels, the people who are promoting this know that this is poison and that it will lead to disaster. It's exactly why they're doing it.
Hmm. And they somehow think that they're going to be exempted from all this, that they get to live in an alternate universe where this doesn't burn down their neighborhood or kill their, you know, family, say, when they're sitting at a stoplight and they're the wrong color or whatever's going to happen.
Yeah, and I like to remind the people who get sucked up into these things, too. Remember Leon Trotsky, right? Leon Trotsky helped overthrow the Tsar in Russia. He was a close comrade of Comrade Lenin. And what happened to him? He ended up with an ice pick in the side of his head, dead in Mexico City. That is what happens so often to these barbarians, because you need to understand, they are ruthless. They mm-hmm. see murder and thievery as a means to an end. And so that is why Stalin could purge his inner circle over and over again. His closest people would end up being shot in the back of the head after being tortured, merely for Stalin getting some suspicion or somebody saying something about them. It always ends this way. You're dealing with barbarians. You're dealing with savages who do not have the same moral code as normal people. They are psychopaths. They don't feel empathy. And people say, oh, you can't say that. That's not true. Look, all you have to do is look back through human history or look into any society in the world. What you find is that there's always a segment of the population that is ruthless, that is bloodthirsty, that's willing to do anything to claw their way to the top and become rich and powerful. And anyone who thinks America is immune from human nature is a fool.
Oh, yeah. And I think we're starting to get a little taste of that right now because of this this agenda that's going on at the highest levels and the people that are...
Well, the idea that you can riot and burn down a city and nothing happens to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
That they needed the things from the Walgreens that they stole or whatever. I think most thinking people realize, wait a second, why are we legitimizing crime?
Yeah, but a lot of the people that said that was okay, it turned on them too.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, that's not right.
Mayor of Portland driven out of his own apartment.
Wait a minute.
Newsflash.
Yeah.
So for just regular people, you know, that are not part of some group or maybe don't even want to be part of a group, what's your suggestion on how they kind of join the resistance, if you will?
Well, it sounds so simple, but I really don't think there's anything more important that an average American can do to save this country than withdraw their children from public school. And when I started saying that, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, I went on Phyllis Schlafly's show and said it, and, you know, even the most stalwart conservatives are like, that might be a bridge too far. You know, yeah, I'll take my own kids out. You know, I got to put my kids in that mess. But, you know, calling for everybody to take their kids out, that's a little bit too far. But things have really changed. Actually, Dennis Prager used almost exactly the same language that I just used a couple of weeks ago. The founder of PragerU, he wrote a column that was widely syndicated, and he said, look, the most important thing that Americans can do to save their country is get their children out of the public schools. Just in the last couple of years, we had, for example, Rush Limbaugh, the king of talk radio, 18 million listeners on average per day, 3 times in the year before he died. He said, listen, parents, especially you millennial parents, you've got to get your children out of the public schools. They're being indoctrinated. Just yesterday, Trump gave a speech in Ohio. He said, we're not dealing with schools. We're talking about left-wing indoctrination centers. Right? In his 4th of July speech last year at Mount Rushmore, he said the reason our cities are burning is because our children are being indoctrinated to hate their own country in public schools. His State of the Union speech in 2020, he said we have to protect our children from these failing government schools. You had Franklin Graham, probably one of the most influential evangelicals on planet Earth. A couple of years ago, he was talking about they had just passed a new law in New Jersey mandating LGBT indoctrination for all children. He said, parents, you don't have a choice anymore. You have to now get your children out of public school, find a good private school to put them in. So the tide is really turning. I just read yesterday that something like 1.5 million children have fled the brainwash camps just over the last year. The number of homeschool families has now more than doubled just over the last year. So the tide is really changing. And you don't have to join any group. And people think of it as a big sacrifice. Oh, you know, I'm going to have less money. And where am I going to find the time? What you'll find is that it'll be one of the best decisions you make in your life.
Right.
It'll make your family stronger. It'll make your children better in every possible way. The data shows this. And plus, it'll help you save your country. So.
Hey, Alex, how much of this move away from public schools do you think is a result of the lockdown and people actually getting to see what is being taught
and getting to have their kids at home too.
Yeah.
I think that's a huge factor in this. So you had both of those. You guys just hit the nail on the head. On the one hand, you have parents who, for the first time, you know, their kids are sitting in the living room watching Zoom. They're watching the people talk about, you know, how to put a condom on a banana or why the evil if your ancestors came here from Europe and you're oppressing people. They're looking at this and think, what?
Yeah.
And then they see the way math being taught. They're like, that's not how you do math. Like, what kind of idiot came up with that? They're thinking, that's totally unacceptable. Then you had a lot of parents get their first little taste of homeschooling. You know, hey, maybe it's actually not that bad to spend some time with my children. You know what? I kind of like them. And, you know what? Maybe we can do this. So you have both of those things at play here that have just been really significant in terms of, first of all, showing parents what a disaster the public school system has become, and also showing them that not only is it feasible to try out alternatives, in fact, the results are amazing.
Well, I read somewhere last week where, I don't know where it was, but a school district had sent home a letter for the parents to sign and return that they would not look at what was being taught on their remote screens at home, that they would just leave it to the
Go ahead and sign the letter.
Yeah, sign the letter and walk away. Don't be watching what we're teaching them. Who in their right mind would sign something like that?
Wait. Who in their right mind would send out the letter?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It's so true. And we saw a lot of school districts promoting that kind of thing. even in conservative states, you had districts in Tennessee where they were sending home letters just like that, saying, parents, you have to agree, you're not going to watch your children's lessons. And, you know, they pretend like it's for privacy reasons.
Yeah, right.
Sure it is. You just don't want people seeing what kind of baloney you're teaching their kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, anybody who would send a letter like that. Well, see, it's interesting, though, because you look at these school boards. You know, they want to get rid of all the holidays and all the crazy stuff we've all seen on the news here in the last few weeks. And you realize that these guys have been operating in a vacuum. And in their vacuum,
right.
They're the smartest people in town.
Right, and they've never been really confronted on the curriculum.
Well, people didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah, they didn't know. And now they're starting to see what it is, yeah. And they're upset.
School board meetings are on Zoom or you know, Skype or whatever, and people can, you know, before the school board meetings were just crickets. And yeah. Now you have all these people watching going, wait a second.
Yeah.
Are you hearing that kind of everywhere?
Oh, everywhere. I mean, even liberals and Democrats, you know, wanting your children to get a decent education
is
not a partisan issue.
You
talk to a Democrat, an Obama, Biden supporter, like, hey, do you want your kids to learn how to read? Oh, well, of course. You know, do you want your kids to do math? Well, of course. You know, who wouldn't want that? So it really is a sea change in the way parents are seeing this. I think it's really encouraging. And there's also this issue of a normalcy bias. You know, well, I went to public school in the 1980s or the 1990s, and you know, it wasn't that bad because, of course, they had no point of reference. That was just what it was. It was normal for those people. They don't realize how bad it has become. And this has been going on for generations, right? Well, I went to public school in the 1960s, and it wasn't that bad. And, well, I went to school in the 1940s, and it wasn't that bad. So they've been able to get away with this.
Right.
This gradual dumbing down of the population, this gradual indoctrination that has really shifted our population in a way that's really would have been unimaginable a few generations ago. If you look at the data, for example, I'm a millennial, which is always embarrassing to admit, but millennials, 70% say they're going to vote for socialists. Millennials are the first generation in American history where self-described Christians are in the minority. And all of this came about as a result of the indoctrination of the public schools. This wasn't an organic development. This was an engineered development. And if you go back far enough, you find that the people who created this system had exactly those objectives in mind.
Because they were talking about that when, I mean, Bill and I were in school in the 60s and 70s, and they were talking about it then. I remember it would have been after we were in Connecticut. And I went to Catholic school, and then after, just in the high school, I went to public school, and I remember we did the lifeboat. That's kind of a famous one, you know, the lifeboat exercise, where they describe, they hand you out this paper, and you've got to be in little teams, and it says who all the people in the lifeboat are, and you have to decide who to get rid of and how you're going to save yourselves, who's got value. You had to assign value to all the people in the lifeboat. And it was a way of getting you to see people as lesser than and other people as more deserving. And at the time, it was weird. And we didn't, I mean, all of us were like, we're not doing this. Even then, we knew as kids it was wrong. But as I got older, it's like, oh, that was all part of that whole thing. Because we were being taught by the hippies of the 60s who wanted, told us our parents didn't know anything. And they didn't understand sexuality. That was the big deal at that time. They wanted you to get all your sex ed from school. And it wasn't as graphic. I mean, we just had the pink movie and the blue movie. Girls went in the pink movie room and the boys went in the blue movie room. There was no green room or whatever they have now for the transgender thing. You had to pick a team.
I don't remember that was went on having forms. That exercise.
Really?
No. Of course, we went to some pretty small schools, country schools.
Yeah, Bill was out in the bed lighting fires in the field. What
the
heck?
Yeah, but you stepped out of line at those schools, and you got introduced to some
Mr. Utt, who broke a rake over a kid's back.
Oh, you got corporal punishment back in those days, and the parents were like, well, he probably deserved it. Don't let him mouth off.
Times have changed. We got to take a really quick break.
You know,
we'll be right back with our guest, Alex Newman, and we'll let him do all the talking. Sorry, we butted in. You're listening to We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
We don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasm in the classroom. Teacher, leave them kids alone.
Yeah, not to put too fine a point on it, but I think we all see that much more clearly than maybe we did when that song first came out.
Hey, we rudely interrupted you on the break there. We were talking about a little corporal punishment in schools and how that's changed a little bit.
Yeah, well, no, I appreciate it, and it's great to have breaks because that's how things stay on the air. But I want to go back to the exercise. Actually, I went through that exact same exercise, Aaron, as a child. They actually started using it in the mid-1960s, and if you read the UN literature on this, they say it should be used all over the world, and they actually tell you specifically why. They say it undermines a child's belief in moral absolutes.
Yep.
Why would you want to undermine a child's belief in moral absolutes? Well, maybe because people who believe in moral absolutes would recognize that it's evil to kill babies or to put people into concentration camps or to start wars based on lies. And then there might be problems for the ruling class. So there's a very strategic reason why they're doing this. It also has the intended effect, I should add, of discrediting a child's parents, a child's pastor, a child's worldview that they've grown up with. Because, you know, from the time kids are kids, and every parent, even non-Christians, they tell you, don't lie, lying is bad, don't murder, murder is bad, right? It's just a universal thing. We recognize that certain things are right or wrong. There's not a gray area. And what this exercise does is it gets children to believe, morality and ethics are subjective. It just depends on the situation. Sometimes there is a time and a place for just having to murder somebody if it's for the greater good.
Yep. Let's decide who's dragging everybody down and who, and it was value. It was all value. Who has the lesser, it seemed, I would have to really look it up. I'm sure it's still online. You know, those kinds of things have been documented, but it seemed to me there was a point system that went with it, if I remember correctly. And you,
a lot of kids developed that,
yeah. Yeah, it seemed to me that the whole thing started out as a point thing, and then, of course, the fight broke out because, you know, everybody was like, you know, we're not, you know, they Delphi'd us, basically, divided us into little groups, and they thought, you know, in our little tribes, we would, you know, turn into Lord of the Flies. It's like, well, sorry, but it took a little longer to get him to the stabbing piggy with the stick than it did.
And it was a simple solution all along, Aaron. Instead of killing somebody, they could have just, the teacher could have just said, hey, now think outside the box. And the kids could have said, well, hey, why don't we just each take turns swimming alongside the life raft? And then nobody has to die, right?
Yeah, right.
That would defeat the whole point of the exercise.
But see, that stuff, I guess it's important really for people to understand this didn't just happen. Because there are a lot of folks that are thinking this is the Bidens did it, you know, the Obamas did it. And I'm like, no, this has been going on.
That's right.
This is a human history problem.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, like I said before, it's really not a partisan issue. The Republican and Democrat administrations alike have advanced the acceleration of this evil in the classroom. It's proceeded under the Bushes. Actually, George H.W. Bush played a huge role in all of this coming about. under his leadership, they actually started with the effort to bring in the national standards. They hired people like Shirley McCoon to start working on that. They put her before all 50 of the nation's governors to explain why we needed to focus on the social change function of schools, as she described it. So that's where they laid the foundation to eventually bring in Common Core. And now we see UNESCO, the UN Education Agency, playing a bigger and bigger role in education policy, not just in the United States but around the world. It's it's ubiquitous now, and unfortunately, Republicans haven't been much help. Yeah, Reagan said he was going to abolish the Department of Education. Well, guess what? It's still there. Trump said he was going to look at abolishing the Department of Education. It's still there. But and then there's a bill in Congress right now, H.R. 899, by Congressman Thomas Massie, who I've actually interviewed him about this bill. He's got great reasons for why it should be adopted. But I do caution parents. I'll throw out this word of caution. Even if we got rid of critical race theory from the schools, even if we could pass a law tomorrow, in my state, I live in Florida, we did pass a law banning critical race theory in the schools. Even if we could do that all over the country, even if we could shut down the Department of Education, it still wouldn't be safe to send your children to these indoctrination centers. It's like a hydra, right? People think of the Department of Education as like the head of the snake. That's really not what the education establishment looks like. It's a hydra with many tentacles, and the Department of Education is just one of those tentacles. And when you chop it off, three more will grow back. So we've got to realize that, the system is the problem. It's not one element of the system.
Yeah, and throwing more money at it, is I think makes it worse. But that seems to be.
Absolutely. How about throwing more meals at it? You know, they're talking about three meals a day at school, and I get that there are places where kids don't, they really don't get to eat well. My sister's school, for instance, when they were off for the virus, they had lunches at school that the kids could come and pick up because otherwise nobody was really feeding them because no one was paying attention to them. She said she teaches, I can't remember, fourth grade, I guess, and she said there were little kids on the Zoom things who were like in a closet because they have 20 people who live in the same apartment, and this kid's hiding in a closet trying to be able to do school. So you have that whole factor going on at the same time, which doesn't lend itself well to, being at home all the time. That was not a good place for a lot of those kids. So you have a whole lot of things happening. Tell me this, where are we, how do we stack up, I guess, as you look at it from a 30,000 foot view? Are we at the front of the line, the back of the line? Are we, at the tipping point? Where are we?
I think we are at a tipping point. I think the establishment feels confident that they have dumbed down and indoctrinated enough of the population that they can really start smashing any of these old ideas about the old America, about, God created us equally and he gave us each unalienable rights and the government exists to protect these rights. I think they really think we've now passed the Rubicon, that, hey, we can dispense with all that. We've convinced several generations that that's just, dead old white guys who had slaves, so there's no reason to pay any attention to that, not realizing that, of course, that sets the foundation for eventually freeing slaves and ending slavery, a scourge that had been with humanity for all of human history. So we are at a tipping point, and I don't know whether it's even possible to turn back from the abyss that we're staring at right now. I hope it is, but on an individual level, I think parents need to step in here and at the very least protect their own children. I kind of look at it as like the school building is on fire, right? The public school building is on fire. Your kids are inside. What do you do? Well, if you say, let's have a petition, or I think I'm going to run for school board, I can tell you don't have any kids. Because if your kids are in the burning building, you run inside and you grab them. And then you put yourself at risk. You make any sacrifice you have to protect them. I think a lot of people don't realize the urgency. They don't realize the problem. And the school building burning down is not just an issue of your children are going to be burned in there. An issue of, hey, if that building continues to burn and our children are all inside of it, it's going to, first of all, destroy our future. Second of all, it's going to burn down everything else. And at that point, it won't be possible to recover. So we may have already passed that. I don't know. But even if we did, I think we all still have an obligation to get involved, to do what we can to reverse the tide. And if we did pass the Rubicon, if there is no going back, hey, we're still going to need people to rebuild from the ashes of civilization. So there's still a good reason to make sure your children get a good, solid education that's grounded in reality, in critical thinking, in logic, in reason, in truth, in the Bible, in the Constitution, in the principles of liberty. There's still a good reason for your children to get a good education. There's never a time where we just throw in the towel and say, oh, I guess they won. Let's all just go home and submit as slaves. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, well, we spoke to a couple of girls at the fair. I don't know if it was Friday or Saturday, but they said, you know, they were, conservatives, and I think you asked them, you know, what do you see with your other students, or, you know,
your peer, how do you fit in your peer group?
Yeah, and they said, oh, there's so many of them that are just idiots. They buy into all this stuff. They think it's, when they get out of school, they're going to get everything for free, and it's like,
I remember
wow.
The one girl, she was 19, and she said she has a cousin. He's not planning on graduating. He's not going to need any of that because the government's going to take care of him because Joe Biden said he would. And they're going to just give him money. And she's like, she was so funny. She goes, you're going to need a job? And yeah. She had just come from the Democrats booth. That was it. She was the, remember her?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
She looked very young, but she turned out she was 19 years old. And she said, I just came from that booth down there. And they are trying to tell people that they can get everything for free. And I said, you can't get anything for free. You have to have a job. And they said, well, corporations are evil. She goes, really? How am I going to get a job? And so she
she was letting them
apparently happen. she was down
they
there.
They weren't convincing her.
She was down there undressing them, and I kind of chuckled. I thought, that's kind of great, actually. They're the I don't know, you know, even back in the caveman days, somebody hung onto the fire.
Yeah, yeah. There's out there that are paying attention
Kind of a resource, Alex, from a resource standpoint, in our last like 4.5 minutes here or something, it is shoot people some resources if they've got kids or if they're grandparents or whatever and they want to help out.
Well, there has never been a better time in history to homeschool. And you guys talk about the ones who are going to keep the flame of liberty burning. That's the homeschool movement, right? The Census Bureau just released some data. They showed about 12% of families with school-age children now are homeschooling their kids. When you realize that homeschool families are generally larger than non-homeschool families, I've got 5 and counting, you realize that means significantly more than 12% of America's youngsters, school-age children, are being homeschooled. And I think that is very encouraging news. If you look at the data, I mean, the homeschoolers are just running circles around the victims of government schools. I say only half kidding, you know, put up a homeschooler with 2 hands tied behind his back and blindfolded. He'll take on 10 victims of government school, no problem, not even break a sweat, in terms of intellectual ability and courage and leadership and entrepreneurship. So these are going to be the future leaders of tomorrow. And as for resources, like I said, there's never been a better time to do this. There are so many options now when it comes to curricula, when it comes to scholarships, when it comes to foundations. We actually recently launched a new ministry. This was in 2019. It grew out of a speaking tour I did on education called A Public School Exit. We have some incredible people on our team. To give you some examples, we've got the former superintendent of public instruction for the state of Arizona, the highest education official in the entire state of Arizona. Spent 4 years at the top of the educational pyramid trying to reform it. She said, Alex, it can't be reformed. It's a waste of time. Just go bang your head against a brick wall if you want to do that. We need to get the kids out. We've got Brad Dacus, the head of the Pacific Justice Institute, is on our board. We've got some of the brightest legal minds, educational minds on our team, and we've got everything you need there to get your kids out of the school, whether that be
Where can they find that info?
That's at publicschoolexit.com, and our headquarters is actually in California. I'm the executive director there, but our headquarters, our main office, and most of our staff are in California, down in Southern California. We also just released a new resource that I think is really important for waking the town. Right? If the school building's on fire and there's a bunch of children trapped inside, after you rescue your own children, you got to let everybody know that, hey, the building's on fire. So we just put out a new special issue. It's called Save Our Children. You can actually find all of the articles for free at the New Americans website. It's thenewamerican.com /save-our-children. And you can order, you know, 100 copies of this report if you want. It's a beautiful magazine. You can give it to your neighbors, the elders at your church, whatever. I do have a book that'll be coming out very soon. It's from a series of columns that I did for the Epic Times on education. I hope that'll be out by the fall, maybe the winter at the latest. And that's just kind of a sneak preview. There's so much out there. And for parents who want to know more about where to find good, you know, private schools or curricular resources, things like that, go to Public School Exit. We've done all the heavy lifting for you. And you know, keep in mind, I know a lot of people are intimidated by this. You've been taught that you can't teach your own children. Baloney. Absolute baloney. And if finances are truly a problem, there are plenty of places that will help you out. And I don't mean like, you know, you're driving a 2020 BMW and
you've got
to vacate home to the Rocky Mountains. That doesn't count as financially struggling. But if you're a single mom with four or five kids and your deadbeat husband ran off, whatever the case is, there are people who will help. There are scholarships, there are foundations that will
awesome.
Help you do it.
We will post this online on the show for today at wethepeopleradio.us. Thank you, Alex Newman, for coming back with Dr. Shizong Chen.